Hello, welcome to the roundtable. Here we go, folks. It's almost time for the best part of the season. We're talking about the playoffs. Just 2 weeks away before we trim the competition down to six teams ahead of the play-in tournament. And it's a real moving day weekend that we just had last week. Some big results. And as I've said, even when we're not trying to put the mocker on teams, we seem to, because I opened up this program, Matt McQuaid, last week by saying, I regret to inform everybody that the Perth fans are starting to get chippy. I don't think they're so chippy right now.
They're not chippy to everybody else, Julian. Good evening. Good morning, good afternoon to whoever may be listening around the world. We appreciate your company. They're chippy towards their head coach again. I told them to calm down. And of course, what happens? Perth goes ahead and loses two games and in shocking fashion. Maybe not the first one, certainly the second one. I've talked about huge upsets this season. This one qualifies as one of the biggest as well. And it speaks to what we've been discussing over the last couple of weeks, and that is the parity of this league. And if you don't come out with the requisite energy, if you don't play to your strengths, if you don't commit to your structures, particularly defensively, if you don't play with energy, intensity, effort, you name it, and if you don't pass the ball and look for the open man, bad things will happen no matter who you're playing. So, yeah, it was quite a remarkable round yet again. The end of round 17, the entirety of round 18, we're now in that position where we've got 19 and 20 coming up. It's incredibly hard to believe that we've only got two rounds remaining in this wild competition. But let's get into it. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, and if you're not following on at home, you're wondering what we're talking about. The Taipans, of course, they completed a sweep of the weekend, beating the Hawks and the Wildcats to fancy their title potential here for this season. Well, wait a minute. They're actually in the bottom of the table, and they've just beaten Perth and Illawarra.
I mean, nuts.
My goodness me. And I want to start with Cairns before we go anywhere else, because I put out on X/Twitter after the win in Perth. I said, quote, surely Adam Ford has bought himself another season as coach with the two Hawk wins as well as tonight. Guy can seriously coach. Some agreed. Some viscerously disagreed. Almost to the point of dunking on me. I didn't realise that was that controversial a take to say that Adam Ford can coach. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Educate yourselves, folks. I want to ask you, do you think he's got himself another season now on the back of these recent performances?
If he wants it, absolutely. I know for a fact that there are a lot of countries sniffing around overseas. He will have a job somewhere in the world. I mean, let's put it out there. He is incredibly highly regarded. Have we all forgotten he was the NBL Coach of the Year a couple of years back? Look, I had the same response when I said the same thing, that he's a hell of a coach. Now, obviously, I've had that relationship with him. That's well known. So you can take what I say with a grain of salt. But I just think objectively, to do what he's done in a situation where they didn't have Taron Armstrong for both games, that's one thing. They've had ridiculous levels of injuries throughout the year. They've never really had a complete team the entire year at any stage when you think about it. When they were early on, before the injuries started to hit, we had that whole thing. What was it back? I think it was late October, early November, where they had those back-to-back wins, and we spent 30 minutes waxing lyrical about them. And then, of course, came the 15-game losing streak. And I get all that. But the majority of those games, they were very competitive. There were a few blowouts, and I certainly accept that. The Melbourne one is a prime example where they lost by 40. And then obviously it wasn't all that long ago that 40 had a go at his team for being selfish. And yet to come out, first of all, to beat Illawarra. Now, granted, it was at home, but an Illawarra team that is a championship, no doubt championship contender, and was, you know, obviously coming off a great win themselves. And most people, myself included, expected them to roll over. And they didn't. They stood up to Illawarra. In fact, they blew them out, and Illawarra, as ever, responded with a huge comeback. Toddy Blanchfield hit a bunch of shots, got them back in the ball game. And they almost stole it. It would have been unfair because Cairns was the better team. So that was one thing at home. But then to travel cross country, a 7.5 hour flight. So they go from Cairns to, I think it's Sydney, and then from Sydney, which is about, what is it, 3 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And then another five, you know, nearly 5 hours across to Perth to take on a Wildcats team that you and I were pumping up and saying, you know, Red Army, calm down. These guys, they're on the march. They're becoming a championship threat. And what happens is that Cairns just goes toe-to-toe with them, comes back from a, what was it, a 9-point deficit in the third period, looked like they were gone. They get it to double overtime in the end after some wild plays, which we'll, you know, we can get into later. But and eventually pulled away in that second overtime period and won really convincingly. And it was remarkable for a team that is playing for nothing, is way out of play-in contention and has been for quite some time. And yet they're still playing hard. They're still playing with energy. They're still playing with effort. They still play like they give a damn. And that, to me, is all about the head coach, because when you're in that sort of a situation, and look, I've been involved with teams that have been in the exact same situation, it is very easy to just toss it away and say, or toss it, I look, let's just go to the off season. Let's go to Hawaii. Let's go to Bali, whatever we do, and let's regroup and come back for next season. Or let's just be selfish, which is what Fordy was talking about before, and just be in it for ourselves because we're looking for our next paycheck. But over that weekend, or over those last two games, I should say, none of that happened. And it was, to me, that's a credit to the head coach for keeping them together, for getting them to play in that way. Look, I had a guy respond and say, well, how come he's on the bottom of the ladder if he's such a great coach? Because that's a team that could never afford to be a team beset by injuries to their key players. It was just never, ever going to work. There's an inherent risk with how they recruit, because they're not as deep as other teams, nor do they spend as much as other teams. So if their imports take a hit, if key Australians take a hit, they just don't have the depth to be competitive for an appreciable length of time and more importantly, win basketball games. So, I mean, the games that they've won as it is, they've beaten Adelaide, Tasmania, Illawarra twice, Brisbane and Perth. The exception of Brisbane, I think that's some impressive scalps right there. But, you know, the injuries have just destroyed them this year. And, look, Fordy would put his hand up and say there may have been things he's done wrong, sure. But coaches aren't going to use injuries as an excuse typically, and he doesn't. But objectively, that is the fact. They have been obliterated by injuries, and that's what's cost them this season. I think the other thing, when you look at him, the development of guys, not just Taron Armstrong, who's going to be an absolute star, and Fordy's got a lot to do with that, but I go back to my guy, Alexander Higgins-Stitcher. He saw what he did in Perth. He was excellent. And this is a kid from the NBL One East program who didn't go to college, who, as Fordy said, slipped through the cracks, and yet is turning into a guy that not only Cairns should re-sign immediately, but other clubs should take a really good, hard look at him. Because he's athletic, he's long, he plays defense, he's still learning the game. He can shoot the three, he can do a lot of things for you. He can rim protect, and we saw that. Most block shots in one game by a development player ever against the Kings when they lost that first game at Kyoto Bank Arena. So that tells me, again, that's all about development. And that, again, that's coaching. He's stepped into that environment, and Fordy's done a great job with him, and he's turned him into a legitimate NBL player. So for those who don't think Fordy's coach, you know, give me a break. He's a great coach, and he's just had a lot of bad luck this year. And if I'm the Taipans, if I'm Mark Beecroft and company, I'm jumping all over that, and I'm trying to re-sign him as quickly as possible.
Yeah, the comment I saw on Twitter that really got me perplexed was, quote, coaching contracts must be on sale if he can buy one with his record. I mean, that if you're just looking at the record of what the Taipans have done this year, you're not seeing the whole story, and either you're doing so out of, you know, choosing not to, you're either ignorant, or you're intentionally trying to see past this. Yes, the losing streak certainly has to be considered, but we would have been having a different conversation, I think, 7 games ago, because the Taipans in their last 7 are 4-3. And in that period of time, they've beaten the Hawks twice and the Wildcats. Now, if they had to continue skidding all the way to the finish, which is what we were thinking, we even said it on this show a few weeks back that Adam Ford would be coaching for his future. Well, he has. You can't argue with that. 7-19, we have seen a lot worse as far as wooden spooners are concerned. And look at New Zealand, they're 9-18, and I'll get onto them in a little bit because, boy, some comments coming out of New Zealand today. 11-16, Brisbane. So, yeah, you absolutely give Adam Ford another crack at it. Now, if the Taipans have a healthy season and we get to this scenario again, then you have a look at it. But for mine, he's absolutely earned the right to get another campaign in Cairns. Hopefully a healthy one, because, like I said, they just don't have the room for margins with that program, with the resources that they have. And for me, it is going to remain one of the big what-ifs of this season. If they didn't have that injury crisis that they suffered, they would very easily be in the top 6, and I think would be hovering close to the top 4 right now, if not, you know, on the tail of Melbourne and Sydney as far as the playing, as far as the semi-final spot, and Southeast Melbourne as well. They are that good a team. So, yeah, what an effort for Adam Ford, particularly that game in Perth. I mean, that was an incredible game of basketball. And you look at it on paper going in, Matty, you think, oh, yeah, look, Perth should absolutely roll over them and that would be the end of it, even with Cairns' wonderful win against the Hawks. But we've got to talk about something else out of Perth that night as well, Matt McLeod, because, geez, the messages that we have gotten on this show on the back of it. I said last week that the Wildcats, the Red Army, was starting to get chippy again. Well, the rest of the league's fan base have certainly gotten chippy again with the RAC whistle, as I like to call it. And it's not just fans, it's also some team owners.
Yes, Mr. Chowdhury.
Good evening, absolutely. Mr. Chowdhury.
That's right. He and Mark Arena are having a bit of a back and forth on X right now about, you know, because of what Romy said, which of course is what pretty much everybody else says about RSC Arena. Yeah, look, it's funny to me. There's people, the Red Army themselves should never, ever, ever complain about officiating again, because Bryce Cotton, he's a legend. And I said that last week. And superstars get superstar calls. But with him, it's getting beyond an absolute joke. Their officials call fouls for Bryce that are not there. They're guessing. Or if you get just so close to Bryce, it's an automatic foul. If it looks like a foul because Bryce is kicking out his legs and doing all this stuff and trying to draw fouls on the threes. He's been doing it for years. And if he tried it in the NBA, he wouldn't last 5 seconds. Here, because he's a legitimate superstar, he gets the benefit of the doubt way too much. That's one thing. The other thing is, and I've got stats to back this up, more often than not, the Wildcats it's been decades. You know, talk in the Rob Beveridge era, even before that, right, and particularly with Trevor Gleeson, they get the rub of the green at RSC Arena more than any other team does at any other arena. And I can prove it. There are stats to back it up. When you're talking about foul differential as one example, so Perth over a period of time, I must admit, I haven't had a look at it recently, but RAC Arena, typically, they will average 3 fewer fouls per game than the opposition team will. So it doesn't seem like much, but that could be 3 trips to the foul line for the Wildcats, right? So I don't want to hear anybody from Perth complain about officials because it's just laughable that you do, because you have gotten much the better of whistles at that venue over the years. And some of the calls in that game were laughable. And it's not a good look. Look, Michael Jordan got superstar calls. Larry Bird got superstar calls. So did Magic Johnson. Probably LeBron James does, or I know LeBron does. And so does Kevin Durant. And that's fine. But what it means is that if you're a fan of that team that that player plays for, you've got no right to complain about officiating. You just don't. And you guys have had it way too good for so long. And so has Bryce. And look, as I said, I get it. I just think it's the height of hypocrisy to then for then Perth fans to turn around and say, we don't get calls, and whinge about officials and whatever. Give me a break. And that was a perfect example with the Taipans game that, that first of all, I mean, that three-pointer, great shot. Did he get fouled? No, he didn't get fouled. Give me a break. That wasn't a foul on Tanner Groves. Come on now. Let's try and be objective here. And look, again, how many times have I said the franchise is the gold standard? The fan base is awesome. I love everything about Perth, but I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear chatter about Perth getting hard done by referees because it's a joke. It is an absolute joke that you never have, well, not that you never have, but certainly in that venue. So yeah, I thought that part of it, I thought was quite funny that Mark Arena bit back. Now he's new, obviously. I know he's been a fan before he bought the club, but what Ramy Chowdhury said was essentially what every other fan base talks about, is how Perth gets they get the 50-50, they probably get 75 to 80% of the 50-50 calls, and Bryce Cotton gets pretty much every superstar call in the book. That's objectively correct.
They get the 40-60 calls, let alone the 50-50 calls. I remember there was one game we called years ago out of RAC Arena. They were playing Adelaide that night, and I think we both ended up started laughing at some of the calls that came out of that particular game. That's always stuck with me. But yeah, when it comes to the discourse around Ramy Chowdhury and Mark Arena, I'll paraphrase here a little bit. Mark Arena has bitten back, and look, this is actually a question that was sent to me via Ryan on Twitter. He said he's all for it because, quote, they say we want the NBL to have that reality TV vibe, and well, here it is. Quoting Ramy on Twitter, this is underneath the score graphic of the Cairns win. This is crazy. Bryce barely gets touched, if at all, on the three and gets the call, as usual, in parentheses. Tennis soon after gets hammered by Pinder over the back on the rebound. So obvious.
Oh.
Even my 3-year-old said it was a foul, unbelievable. And then it was responded to by Mark Arena saying, "Lol, Romy, keep drinking that Yarra water." I really would not advise that. The north,
No.
east, south, I wouldn't advise swimming in it, let alone drinking it. The north, east, south, west Perth Wildcats are looking forward to SEM's visit on Friday night. I'm not sure that that name's going to stick, Mark, but you know.
No, not quite.
I like what he's doing with the place, but yeah, that's a
Yeah.
bit of a tongue
But
twister.
that there was, yeah. But that I forgot about that. I mean, again, it was another example. I mean, that non-call on Pinder. I don't know what you can't do anything other than laugh. I mean, it was just that's a foul every day of the week. But the officials, and look, I hasten to add this. It's part of the reason that the Wildcats get great, get more calls at home than anywhere else, which is, and it's a lot to do with the fan base because, and that's a credit because they are so loud, they can be incredibly vociferous, and it's human nature for officials, and for people, but nobody wants to be booed. No one wants that smoke, right? They don't want that. They want it to be happy, happy, joy. Yes, oh, great call, ref, yeah, all that stuff. That's what they want. But the problem is, it means you're not calling the game, completely impartial. And Again, I'm not saying by any stretch, I'm not accusing anyone of anything, that it's deliberate or whatever. Far from it. I just think it's human nature. I think, they look at it and they look at Bryce and they know how much Bryce means to the Red Army. They're going to protect his ass. It's as simple as that. And, and they don't want to be booed. So in a 50-50 situation, more often than not, that's going to go to the home team because they want that cheer. They want to feel good. They want those endorphins. I mean, and it's subconscious most of the time. But I'm not saying any of this is deliberate by any stretch. But I mean, I can also tell you a story about, now this thankfully doesn't happen anymore. But there was a young Perth guy. This is probably 14, 15 years ago. There was a young Perth guy who was one of the officials, typically at RSC Arena. It might have been 10 years ago, who, again, probably didn't mean to, but he didn't want the fans to boo him. And it was well known by every other team that came in the joint whenever he was there that they were not going to get calls from this guy. So, again, I hate casting aspersions on officials, and I've said this many times. I hate blaming officials for losses, right? In this case, it wasn't a loss anyway, but with Cairns. But I don't like it when, coaches come into press conferences and blame officials, whether directly or indirectly, or they imply that it was down to this call didn't go our way, that call didn't go our way, and this is why we lost. I hate that. I'm just saying this is, again, with Perth officiating at RSC Arena in particular, it probably was very similar at the Jungle, the old Jungle at Challenge Stadium, and even going all the way back to the Perth Entertainment Centre. It's favoured the home team more than it favours the home team in any other venue in this league. And as I said, I had stats to prove it as far as the foul differential between, how many fouls per game they get called for versus at RSC Arena versus how many fouls a game they get called for anywhere else. Now, I must admit, I haven't looked at that particular game. Matter of fact, that Cairns game. But it's, again, it is kind of more than that as well. So, it's a whole bunch of things. So, yeah, I mean, Cairns, 26 personal fouls per 24. So it's fairly even, but it's also, situational as well, when those fouls are called and what sort of fouls are being called.
To tale as old as time, you go into RAC, it's part of the experience. And it shouldn't necessarily be, but it is part of the experience. It is what it is, unfortunately. I don't see it changing anytime soon. It hasn't changed in my time in the league that if you're going to Perth, you've got to be very, very, very disciplined. Very disciplined.
100%. And as I said, look, I've got no problem with Bryce getting superstar calls. I don't. Except when it gets a bit ridiculous, which it did in that Cairns game a couple of times.
Did Gazy get these kind of calls?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, he was the guy, and sometimes he did. And he'd probably be the first to admit it. There is other guys that I've seen get it, but not to the degree Bryce does. I'll say that. Definitely not to the degree. And look, everybody gets, as I said before, everybody gets superstar calls. It's the nature of the beast, unfortunately. But because you want to see him out there, you want to see him playing, and the fans want to see him and all of that stuff. And I get all of that. But my whole point was just about the Red Army not bitching and complaining about officiating, because quite frankly, they've got no right to.
Well, I'm glad you're taking the bullets this week from the Red Army and not me, so.
No, that's all right. I mean, I told them to quiet down about Johnny, and of course, they proceed to lose two games, so they're already going to be pissed off with me anyway. So, yeah, bring it on, whatever. I know, look, there's many Red Army people I'm friends with, that I've known for a long period of time. We go back and forth a few times, so yeah, look, it's all in good fun.
Going to say, didn't help them on the court anyway because they lost that game. They lost
yeah,
against
they did.
They lost against Melbourne United as well at home. I mean, this run of Melbourne United at RAC Arena in this decade is just absolutely astounding. 10 out of their last 11 they have won against Perth at RAC Arena. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
That record they have there.
It is. And it kind of, I mean, for NFL fans out there, the one thing it reminds me of, it's like when Aaron Rodgers was playing for the Green Bay Packers, he absolutely owned the Chicago Bears. He owned them. And to the point, it was just laughable. Whether it was at Lambeau Field or whether it was at Soldier Field, Aaron Rodgers just beat the Bears all the time. And this is what this feels like again. It's like Perth just cannot beat Melbourne at REC Arena. 10 of the last 11, as you mentioned, Julian, losses to United. It's crazy. And, you know, look, you can probably forgive them that loss because, I mean, Melbourne's a quality ball club. But then to turn around and lose to a last-place Cairns team when you've really still got a chance at second place. And they even now do still, we'll get onto that later on, you know, sort of the permutations of each team. But, you know, more than likely they've lost their chance to get automatic qualification into the semifinals. So, you know, with two games left and two very difficult games, excuse me, three games left, I should say, and all three against playing contending / championship chasing teams, there's some danger signs there for them, and they need to fix things up quickly. Good news is for them, look, we have to say those two games, Dylan Windler, who's been terrific for them of late, wasn't there. That made a huge difference. He's expected to come back from that eye injury. They're also hopeful anyway of Ty Webster coming back. So John really for the last three games ostensibly should have a complete unit. So really there won't be any excuses for where this team finishes this season.
On Melbourne, they do have the two games left and both of them are at John Cain Arena. A road trip that you have to consider a success in every sense of the word. 5-2 out of the seven games on the road. They're 10-4 with their road record this season, which is magnificent. Said before that the problem with Melbourne United this season has been their home record. And they have, well, they've got two intriguing contests, two interesting ones. The first one, under normal circumstances, I would be leaning towards Tasmania. If Tasmania pull this off, this is a near miracle with how they are as far as being banged up. But that last round throwdown, goodness me. Last game of the regular season, they've picked this perfectly. I wouldn't mind a few minutes with the crystal ball that must be sitting in NBL HQ to have come up with that ahead of time. But yeah, Melbourne absolutely have the box run. They have the rails run when it comes to finishing in second. But I don't know about you, Matt. I'd feel a bit more confident if they were doing this on the road.
Yeah, it's funny, and they've struggled against Southeast Melbourne of late. So that last game, that could be anything. Who knows? Especially with the Phoenix that probably have been consistently the best team in the league over the last, 6 to 8 weeks probably? You could make that argument. Yeah, it's funny, but look, again, they control their own destiny. Yeah, two wins, they'll finish second. One win, they leave the door ajar for other teams to steal second, but two wins, that locks it away, and you know that they can still look, if results go their way, they can even still finish first, right? So they just have to take care of business in their own building. Look, I thought that win in Perth was one of their better performances of the season. I thought they again really shut Bryce Cotton down, and that's the great defensive backcourt of Shea Elliott and Matthew Dellavedova. Jack White, who's been inconsistent this year, I think it's safe to say, 26 points, 16 boards, just an absolute monster game, dominated the Perth front line to a fairly well. Ian Clark, I thought that could be a really key weekend, or at least round 17. I keep thinking because it was so long ago. But the 16 against Perth and 24 against Brisbane, look, that could be a sign he's rounding into form. They could have been the classic get-right games for him. I've said last week that I think one of the weaknesses in Melbourne is the over-reliance on Chris Golding. They need that second scorer to step up. That's going to be Ian Clark. with cameos from Jack White. I mean, those three guys are, they're going to have to shoulder a large offensive responsibility if this team is going to go all the way this season. So it was important to get them both going over the last couple of games. So clearly, Roblo, Marcus Lee, they still need to step up. They've got really a great opportunity against a decimated front line in Tasmania, and then obviously a very good front court, particularly with the likes of Jordan Hunter, Matt Hurt, with Southeast Melbourne, but they need to impose themselves. So, and yeah, it's incredible. I mean, you mentioned that round 20 game against the Phoenix. I mean, ultimately they could finish second or fourth potentially in that game. I've been having fun playing around with a ladder predictor. It's a really great initiative for the NBL, particularly when it gets down to what you call nut crunching time. So these last two rounds, it's there are so many different permutations still in, out there. It is remarkable. It's a great addition, and it's especially where you can fool around with the results and change everything and sort of. I mean, yeah, you do tend to get lost in it, to be honest with you, because there's so many different calculations and if this team wins this and that team loses that and how does that change it and where do teams end up? And yeah, it's great stuff. So I give the NBL a lot of credit for that.
If everything goes the way that I'm going to be tipping, then that will mean the last game of the season, Melbourne versus Southeast Melbourne, will be for second spot.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah, that's just one
It could be.
permutation. Of course, in this competition, particularly this year, expect anything. So
Yeah.
just basically tip all the underdogs. You'll probably get half right. Round 20, and we'll get into this, of course, next week, but round 20, my goodness me, haven't they picked it beautifully? Friday night, February 7, Illawarra, Sydney at the WEC. Then after that, Perth and Adelaide at RAC. And then the final game of the regular season on the Saturday, Melbourne, Southeast Melbourne. We've had big final rounds before, but I don't recall a situation where we've had three games that you can consider as season defining and playoff defining in the space of 24 hours like this.
Yeah, and it's because of how this league has been all year. And again, that word parity, that's what it's all about. And when you've got a ladder in this form, when Illawarra still isn't guaranteed top spot 2 weeks out, and I wouldn't have believed that, but here we are. So, look, they've lost nine games, second place 10, next three teams 11. Then you've got that. Really, the only two teams that matter at them anymore. Even Brisbane isn't out of it technically, but reality is they are. But Adelaide 13 losses, Tasmania 14 losses. So two losses separates first from fifth, which hasn't happened in a very, not for a while anyway. And it's just we haven't had the juggernaut, the true juggernaut teams that we've been used to. And yeah, it's just there's an equivalence in the league that it means their tagline, every game matters, is actually spot on because it's been proven to be true this season in particular. So yeah, that's why we're in this situation, and it's great for the competition. It's great, should be great for crowds. The interest should be right up there. We should have a bunch of sellouts. I know. The Illawarra Sydney game, forget about it. It's probably already sold out or very close to, because that game could mean everything as well. There's just so much on the line over the next two rounds.
Melbourne, you mentioned rounding into form or potentially rounding into form, and that could be a scary proposition because I felt this for the better part of 6 to 8 weeks that this seems like a season that a team can catch fire at the right time and go on and run and win it. And Melbourne, we have seen early on in the campaign what they can be like at their best. Their start to the season, they were outstanding. They were the pick of the bunch before they fell away in December. It's about timing your run. And I've got to ask you about Illawarra because, look, they still are, for mine, the best team in it right now, but dropping a couple of games to the Cairns Taipans at this particular juncture isn't ideal, and this has happened now in the space of a month. They've lost twice to the Taipans in the month of January. Now, granted, they've been pretty good the rest of the way. They did have that loss in Adelaide, which they very nearly came from nowhere to win that. But obviously, round 17, they took care of business in emphatic fashion, and then the loss to the Cairns Taipans. They're still the top of the pops. They're still at the top of the standings. But if you look at it from that lens of, it's like a horse race. You want to be hitting stride as you turn into the final straight. Well, we're now turning into the final straight. Do you think we can see better out of Illawarra?
Look, I hasten to agree with Damon Lowry, but the word he used in his article on NBL.com.au was complacency, and it was absolutely on the money. I think there has been a level of complacency with this team because in those losses to Cairns, both times, they haven't been what the Illawarra Hawks' identity has been all season. That is maximum effort, maximum energy, intensity, focus, commitment to D, moving the ball, not being selfish, not go ISO hungry, not doing any of that negative stuff. Because I saw them against Melbourne, and I've said this to many people, I came away thinking that's the champions. I just thought if they play like that, with the depth that they have and the coaching that they have, because I think Justin Tatum's the coach of the year, and they're going to get home court, and I cannot see a team managing to grab, well, you know, one game in a semi-final scenario and, you know, maybe two games in a grand final slash championship series rather scenario. But then you know, there's a pause because you sort of look at what Cairns did to them and you think, and they just didn't play with any of that stuff that's been their identity all year. One thing I do know, as I said, I think Justin Tatum will be all over them in training this week. I think that will be the absolute focus, is to get your head out of your asses and essentially get back to being who we are as a basketball team. And that is, you know, tough, resilient. We don't take anything for granted. We play hard to the final whistle. We do all those things that have gotten us to top spot on the ladder for a period of a month and a half now. So, or, you know, roughly that. So, you know, I think there's a slight concern, but I'm not really worried about it. The only thing I will say is that losing Darius Days has hurt them because, look, he was the third import. He was fulfilling a role off the bench, but he's really a guy that can do a lot for you. You know, he can shoot the three. He's athletic. He gets up and down the court. Probably doesn't play defense to the level that Justin Tatum would want, but he was working at it. But he gave them a point of difference for that import coming off the bench. They don't have that. So hopefully this hamstring injury or whatever this leg injury is just minor and he'll be back, you know, sooner rather than later. But, yeah, that's probably the only thing that gives me pause about them at the moment is that injury to him. I think they'll be fine otherwise. I think, as I said, they've shown that they bounce back from poor performances very, very quickly, and I see them doing that. I mean, obviously, two road games is a test, albeit against Tasmania and New Zealand. We'll obviously get to the picks later, but those are two games they should win that'll set them up for a really top spot. And then, of course, finishing against Sydney, for whom they should have no lack of motivation.
There's no chance that they're not going to be at full motivation for that Sydney game. My goodness me. You did say, though, about looking at it from a serious perspective, and we're starting to look at things through that lens as well. Who could go to Illawarra and win one game in a semi-final and win two games potentially in a championship series? Looking at the teams in it right now, I don't think Adelaide can do it. I don't think Perth can do it.
I disagree.
No, I don't think Adelaide...
We can get to that in a minute. Yeah.
There's one reason that Adelaide can't do it.
Road record, I know, yeah.
4-8. And the thing is, even if Adelaide did, I wouldn't be surprised if they went back home and laid a massive egg and they got beat by 30. It's just that they're too Jekyll and Hyde. But then again, if there is a team that could get hot and shock us all from sixth place. This Adelaide 36ers roller coaster, I said it last week, Matty, it would be fitting if they went on and win the whole thing, just the way that this campaign has been.
Yeah. Could you imagine them giving the championship trophy to Montrezl Harrell? I mean, the NBL hierarchy.
Larry Sengstock medal.
Or the Larry Sengstock medal, exactly. Oh, my goodness.
Now I want to speak this into existence almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
Adelaide, what do we make of them? Because for them to go to Sydney and to pull off that win against the Kings, again, to go into Sydney's barn and beat them twice in one season, they follow this up with a big win over the Breakers, but I mean, the Breakers have been the Breakers. But to go to Sydney and do it again, like this wasn't on the back of a come to Jesus meeting or whatever it was that we were told happened, the players meeting the day before when all of that fervor was at its peak. They went there and they got Sydney again, a Sydney team that had just come off the back of a very impressive display against the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix at the State Basketball Centre, a Phoenix team that going into that game were one of the hottest in the competition. They were 14-5 since going 0-5. So to go there and win at the SBC, that's impressive. And then that happens. We'll start with Adelaide because that makes me think, oh, okay. Maybe we've got six teams in this thing.
Yeah. Well, look, number one, they're a bad matchup for the Kings for the obvious reasons. That front line of theirs, just the Kings just have nothing to do with it, particularly when Cameron Oliver, and I know he grabbed 14 rebounds, but only 6 points, was really ineffective for most of the night, I felt. And, you know, you never see him go to the basket, Oliver. It's in the half court. It's all these, he gets in, he sort of backs down, and then he fades away. He has these fadeaway shots in the paint. And sometimes they go down, sometimes they don't. He's not shooting the ball well from three. So offensively, it's been a real struggle for him. And he was in that game against a much bigger athletic front line as what Adelaide has. And then the other thing Adelaide does very, very well is that they scout Xavier Cooks extremely well. So what they do is they defensively, they pack the paint in the half court and they basically dare Cooks to try and go in and create something or dare him to shoot the jumper from the outside, which he can't. He can't do. He's a terrible shooter. Look, you got to be honest. It hasn't improved. It's why he's not a great free throw shooter either. It's the main reason he's not going to be an NBA player anytime soon. He's a great player. He does a lot. You know, I hasten to add that. It's just that Adelaide have got the antidote to him, and that is pack the paint. And I've seen it twice now with my own eyes. 1 foot in the paint defense, they collapse the interior. They force him to give up the ball. He doesn't want to shoot it if he can help it. Then when he does attack, he's got 2 to 3 bodies in front of him every single time. And in Adelaide's case, it's the bigger bodies like a Montrezl Harrell or an Isaac Humphries or even a Jarrell Martin. He just can't get his shot off against them. And it was on the break. That's when you want him as much as possible. But if Adelaide controls the tempo and the Kings can't get out and run, and one of the ways Adelaide controls tempo is offensive rebound, which is another problem the Kings have gotten and and it's been their issue since day one, is giving up way too many offensive rebounds, then yeah, I mean, Xavier's just not going to be the Xavier Cooks that, you know, that the Kings would want to see. And that is a guy that can give you 15 to 20 a game, but only on his terms. And Adelaide is a horrendous matchup for the Kings at the moment because Kelly Lau-Pepe isn't there. So you've got a key frontline piece that's missing. And really it's down to Cooks and Oliver to kind of be those guys. And Adelaide had their way with them, both of them. And part of that was Isaac Humphries, who was outstanding. I mean, he was sensational and really a huge key to victory for them in that ball game. I mean, he blocked 4 shots. He was a force underneath. Offensively, he just got into the paint at will. The Kings just had absolutely no answers for him, and they got dominated. I mean, Ice ended up with, 19 points, 9 boards, 4 blocks, 2 steals. He was in less than 30 minutes. He was outstanding. Kendrick Davis was brilliant again. 30 points, five rebounds, six assists, made every big play when it needed to be made. You know, Trez was great, 23 and 11. You know, had former LA Rams running back Todd Gurley in the audience to play up for and did a great job. Look, DJ Vasiljevic hit some big shots, even though he was only 4 of 13 from the field. And Sunday Dech did a great job off the bench for them. So, look, there's no doubt, we've said, their top-line talent is as good or better than any other team in the league, you know, man for man. The depth has always been their question mark, but, it, you know, on their day, if they execute, if they play D like they did against the Kings, and maybe it's just a thing against the Sydney Kings, they can beat anybody. We've seen it. And they are definitely the one team I look at as being a team that can legitimately win this thing from fifth or even sixth in constant, you know, situations where they're all, you know, got to have them games. They can do it. Now, they are massively Jekyll and Hyde, as we've seen. But the team that I saw play against the Kings, you put that team against any other team in the league and they can be more than competitive.
Are the Kings playing underband?
No one's talking about it, but they are. And this is why I've said before, I think for Brian Goorjian to get this team into the play-in tournament, which he has, they are officially in, and they still have a shot at second place on the ladder in the automatic semi-final qualification. I think it's been an amazing performance. Now, people say, oh, you know, look at all the players they signed. Well, I've already said in the preseason, not said in the preseason, but I've said in hindsight that in the preseason, the Kings recruiting wasn't as it should have been. I thought they made some mistakes in recruiting, and I hold to that no matter what happens this year. It's just been compounded by injuries, which, of course, you know, you can't account for when you're putting together a team. But I guess in one respect, you should at least allow for that possibility in how you build a team. And I think for the second straight year, I don't think they built the team particularly well. So, and for the reasons I've spoken about a couple of times. So that's one thing. But I think people are forgetting how much Leo Pepe was meaning to that team. When he was on the court, that is. Of course, he did have a couple of those kind of strange DMPs. The whole third import thing was a debacle, and without a doubt, and it should have been taken care of initially. I think they should have gone for three imports rather than if you were getting Bol Qual, well, that was the spot where you get your third import and an impact third import. But when Jalen Galloway went down, and that was just a third of the way through the season, how it's taken that long to get a replacement is, again, beyond me. And I know that Chris Bondgrass has explained it, but in terms of, you know, they've been looking at guys, there's been, you know, stuff has fallen through and this and that and all, you know, but I still can't believe that it took that period of time, even though I grant that it is difficult when competitions are in full swing to get an import guy, even a guard. Now, obviously, the guard was always going to be the play because I've said this before. Import bigs are just may as well not even bother, you know, in terms of getting a replacement because you're not going to get anybody that's going to do anything, you know. And that's even been – Kings have even had that in the past, right? It just doesn't work. So forget about that. But, yeah, people are forgetting that they're on demand. I mean – Jalen Adams was spectacular against Adelaide. 43 points, the most ever scored by a Sydney King in a 40-minute game, equal 10th most in any game in franchise history from an individual. And all this despite clearly dealing with a back that's restricted him all year. He's just found – he's having a great year, comparatively speaking, because he's had to find ways to get the job done without having that explosive get past anyone ability or, you know, being able to elevate and throw it down, which we know he's been capable of in the past. I mean, this back injury has been debilitating. And I think the Kings have done a great job in kind of managing it as much as they can, but it's telling, as brilliant as he was. And again, you know, you sort of look at that He had 43 in that ball game. And then the next best was Bol Quol and Xavier Cooks for 12 apiece. So he had absolutely no help offensively. You know, Oliver had 9 and 14, but yeah, I may have said 6 before, but it was 9. But still, you're not even double figures. I mean, it's from your second import. That's not good enough, especially your big guy. So yeah, look, I think it's why they're not going to win the championship this season. Ultimately, I just think the lack of bodies is telling. If Kelly Laupepe makes a miraculous recovery, and that will help them a lot. You know, if they either make the final four or in the play-in tournament. So it's yeah, look, it's tough. You know, Jalen's got no help. I mean, Sean Bruce was a DMP against Adelaide. I thought that was surprising, but Brian Goorjian explained it that it was more a matchup thing, and I get that because, you know, Leartha's going to have to be guarding Kendrick Davis at some stage, and he's got to be able to help limit either him or Dejan Vasiljevic. And Sean Bruce defensively just doesn't have the wheels anymore. It's not a knock on him. It's just he's an older player. And so he can't keep in front of guys anymore. So, and then Tyler Robertson's a rookie and he's really not going to give him that much. So, yeah, I mean, that they are playing. And then, you know, you get Kuat Noi. I'm not going to say turned into a pumpkin, but obviously he's been flying high, but only scored 8 points off the bench, 3 of 13 from the field. So they missed his output when he was, you know, averaging in those five previous games over 20 points per game. So they missed that productivity offensively off the bench. It was really a one-man show. And, I mean, Jalen in the first half, when you could see his back was shot, was, I thought, absolutely heroic. You know, it just the way he battled through the pain and was still hitting ridiculous shots from, you know, all points of the court.
Is the run home for all the teams still left in contention, and we're excluding the Brisbane Bullets here. Illawarra 17-9. They have Tasmania on the road, New Zealand on the road, and then at home against Sydney. They, of course, are going to be looking to finish first. They could also finish in second or third. Melbourne 17-10. They've got home matches against Tasmania and South East Melbourne. They can go as far as first or as far down as fourth. Sydney 16-11. They've got a home blockbuster this Sunday against Perth, and then they hit the road against the Hawks. They can finish as high as top spot or as low as fifth. South East Melbourne 15-11. They've got a road trip to Perth and then a home matchup against Adelaide on Sunday, and then a road throwdown, which is in their shared home building. They could also finish as high as first or as low as fifth. Perth, a home matchup against the Phoenix, then they hit the road to take on the Kings, then they finish at home against Adelaide. Adelaide, 13-13. They've got a home matchup against Brisbane, and then they hit the road for contests against the Phoenix and Perth. And Tasmania, we're including this as well. Home game against the Hawks, road game against United, home game against Cairns. So to look at the records right now, Illawarra 17-9, Melbourne 17-10, Sydney 16-11, South East Melbourne 15-11, Perth 15-11, Adelaide 13-13, Tasmania 12-4. What does that run home tell you, Matt?
12-14. They'd love to be 12-4.
What did I say?
You said 12-4.
Oh, well. Maybe next season. And if they are next season,
that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Conspiracy theory from hell. 12-14.
Yeah, 12-14.
What does that run home tell you?
Yeah, well, the first thing that stands out to me is that with 2 rounds remaining, 5 teams could finish first. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, and we talked about that earlier in about the parity of the league and how close a competition this is. Well, that's proof positive, right? And that comes from me kind of fooling around with the ladder predictor. I think, look, you want to crystal ball it. In all likelihood for me, based off the competition, and again, without many wanting to disrespect anybody, because we've seen anything can happen. Tasmania, it's going to be the last throw of the dice against Illawarra coming up. There's no two ways about that. That Thursday game at My State Bank, they lose that and that's them done. You know, because they will not beat Melbourne on the road. I can't see it. Likely to beat Cairns at home, but Cairns could throw everything at them and just play with absolute freedom and shock them, because Cairns have still got some talent, and as we've said, they're still very well coached. But I think the game that will probably be the first domino to fall for me. If Tasmania loses at home on Thursday to Illawarra, I think that will pretty much do it, and it will that should, in fact, will lock in a top two spot for Illawarra. And so they will have home court advantage at least for the semi-finals. It could come down to that game against New Zealand on the road, which won't be easy, but I think New Zealand are pretty much done for the year. You can talk about them in a moment. But if they do drop one of those games, then that home game versus Sydney could mean everything in terms of, whether they finish first or second on the ladder, even. So, yeah, it's interesting for them. But I personally think they're going to finish first. I think Melbourne finishes second. I think they win both their games. Although Southeast Melbourne, that's a real dicey one. Sydney's the funny one because, yeah, like we'll get on the picks later, but the Perth game is fascinating for me. It's for the Kings, it's a better matchup than Adelaide is, but then Illawarra has been a terrible matchup for them this year. So I think for them, fourth is probably likely. The Phoenix, to me, I think, they can finish anywhere on the map depending on the results, and they've got three really tough games. There's no question. But I personally think they're going to finish third. I think Perth will finish fifth. But that will depend on probably, well, that'll definitely depend on, well, it's going to depend on all three games, let's face it. And they can still, jag first. I mean, a lot of stuff would have to happen for them to get first. But a lot of teams above them would have to lose. But I think more than likely, those two home losses, man, they were all locked in. They could have been challenging for top spot legitimately, even though they've got, a pretty ordinary percentage in comparison to, say, Illawarra at the moment. But that Sydney game, clearly the Southeast Melbourne and the Sydney game is going to prove a lot, but also Adelaide. That they can drop as far as low as fifth, and then Adelaide. Look, I think Tasmania is just so beaten up, man. They're just so beaten up. I just think you look at their run: home against Illawarra, road versus Melbourne, home versus Cairns. They could look a couple of those games. In normal circumstances, I'd say they'd be in all of those games. But right now, with all the guys that are missing, it's the law of diminishing returns, unfortunately, for them. So I think Adelaide finishes sixth at the end of the day. Maybe fifth, but likely sixth.
So I've got Illawarra finishing first at 20-9, Melbourne in second, 18-11. Southeast Melbourne will finish in third on percentage, equal with the Kings on record, 17-12, and the same as the Wildcats. But Southeast Melbourne will get the nod with percentage. Sydney will finish in fourth, and there'll be a hair between them and the Wildcats when it comes to percentage. Perth in fifth, Adelaide in sixth place. So that would mean...
Yeah, same as me.
Yeah. So that would mean Southeast Melbourne and Sydney in the seeding qualifier, Perth and Adelaide in the straight elimination game, the playing qualifier.
Wow.
So you'd be looking at Southeast Melbourne and Sydney hosting either Perth or Adelaide in the play-in.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
And that would also mean the potential...
Mouth-watering. If that's how it finishes, yeah, mouth-watering matchups, no doubt.
It also means the potential of the semi-final series being a freeway series and a throwdown.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, yeah, potentially.
You think they're not singing all the way to the cash register if that's the case?
Yeah, 100%. Cha-ching.
And you know what? You can accuse me of Melbourne bias because that's where I live now. I actually really hope we see a throwdown semi-final series in Melbourne because we didn't get to see it in Melbourne 4 years ago. We got to see it behind closed doors in Sydney.
We were live. We were there.
Yeah. Us and about 50 others.
Yeah, the Kudos Bank Arena of all things. Yeah, hilarious.
I want to see it here in Melbourne in front of full crowds.
It'd be awesome. Yeah. And what did you say before, last week? Rod Laver Arena?
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's there. It's not like it's being used at the moment. So Australian Open's done. I get it's probably too late in the piece. But man, and look, you know, if you're Melbourne, you're, but then again, what does it matter? It's the same, you're in the same building anyway. So the only difference is obviously you're in a different dressing room, and the game day activations and the presentation's completely different. And I get all of that. The feeling is different in that building when you play South East Melbourne. But the truth is, it's the same venue, it's the same rims, it's everything else. What difference would it make to go over and play a game in Rod Laver Arena? And how much eyeballs would that draw? Because we've said before that place, when it's full, it's incredible. It's got an amazing atmosphere for basketball. And look, I'm sure there's a million reasons why it's not feasible to do it. I'm just saying it would be a great thing for the NBL if it could be done.
Even if it was just one game, because I'm looking
Yeah.
at what's coming up at Rod Laver Arena. There's about 55 different concerts, it seems,
Yeah,
over
of
the month.
course, yeah.
So you've got Bryan Adams, Drake the Prodigy, Kylie Minogue's showing up, Billie Eilish, Chris Stapleton, everybody. So you'd be fighting with the concert crowds, but you can't honestly tell me that something can't be done to even just get one game. Even if it was game one, something.
Yeah,
I'd love to see it.
exactly.
One
Yeah,
day.
100%.
One day.
And then, and of course, you know, the Sydney Illawarra series sells itself, and you'd have sellouts at both. You just would. You know, you'd have a sellout. You'd have a sellout definitely. I mean, they'd be hanging from the rafters trying to get a seat at the Wynn Entertainment Centre. And I would be very surprised if you got less than 15,000 to a Sydney Illawarra semi-final
Be amazing, and you can.
minimum. And just quickly, by the by, I had a really good conversation with Matt Denham, the majority owner of the Sydney Kings, last week prior to the Adelaide game. Asked about the pod too, so there you go. So hope he's listening. And I said to him, you know, if you missed the last one, you should listen to it because I pumped you up, you and the family up. So. And he had a big laugh about that. But anyway, he said that I asked him about ticket sales for that Perth game. And he said they're tracking better than the Pink Hoops game did,
Wow.
which of course drew the fifth largest crowd in NBL history, 16,700. So if that's the case,
It'd be 17 plus.
that's Sunday coming up. That's going to be 17 plus. So yeah, that's going to be incredible.
My
And
goodness.
again, fantastic. And once again, congratulations to Robin and Matt and Victoria and the rest of the hierarchy for making that happen and getting people out to games and bums on seats. It's remarkable. I'd love to see another 17,000 crowd.
Conversely, and this is, of course, excluding Perth and Adelaide, assuming they get eliminated in the play-in tournament, and of course you can hear the screams from the West already. Conversely, it could also end up with Illawarra South East Melbourne, which would be packed out houses at both, and then Melbourne and Sydney.
Yeah,
So that sells
and
itself too.
again, that sells itself too. And assuming, you know, Perth or Adelaide don't get through, and as we've said, yeah, I mean, it's not beyond the realms for either of those teams to go all the way. They've got the talent to do it. Perth's got the best player in the game in Bryce, and still a lot of talent. And Adelaide's got the best top end talent, maybe top three guys in the league. You know, the best three in a team is what I mean. So, yeah, who's to say they couldn't do it?
This
Yeah,
makes it
man,
so
it really
exciting.
sets up. It's going to
Yeah.
be fantastic. Yeah, it
Can't wait.
really sets up. It's why we love it. It's why we love the league. We get to this point of the season, and particularly when it's like this, when five teams still have a chance of finishing first on the ladder. It's amazing.
So let's get to the picks for this weekend, the penultimate weekend of the regular season, round 19. We'll start Thursday night, Tasmania, Illawarra. Down in Hobart, my State Bank Arena, where they're probably going to be in a good mood in Hobart because it seems like the Hurricanes are on their way to a Big Bash championship.
Well, that's something. Yep.
They'll be in a good mood, but this is going to, well, that's actually quite something. They'll have both the Big Bash champions and the defending NBL champions being from the state of Tasmania, even if it would appear that the Jack Jumpers' hold on the championship is about to be dismantled.
Yeah.
This is judgment
Yeah,
day for the Jack Jumpers, and even so, no. But it's been a
well,
hell of a run.
that it's been a great run. Look, that loss to the Phoenix, I think, told the story. I think they're just worn out, you know, and the Phoenix were sensational in that. I mean, 41 points in the fourth quarter, 70 in the second half was a remarkable effort, considering they only led by 1 point at the half. Tasmania gave them everything they can handle because that's how they play, that's who they are, that's what the culture is, yada, yada, yada. We've said it a million times, but it's true. But ultimately, as I said, there's only so far you can go with kids and with missing so many important pieces to your puzzle. And they've hit the wall, quite frankly. They will give everything they have against Illawarra. They may even lead at the half. But ultimately, Illawarra just has too much to play for to let this slip, because they're putting themselves in danger if they do. And they're obviously not going to miss the playoffs. That's not what I mean. But they just cannot afford to lose this game. And against a Tasmania team that's playing a lot of young kids, that is just dramatically undermanned, probably more so than any other team, still giving a great account of themselves, still showing fight. I mean, that look, giving up 41 points had nothing to do with lack of effort. It was just they just ran out of gas and they ran out of inspiration in the end. So I think Illawarra gets this one. I think it'll be a fight early, as I said. It wouldn't surprise me if Tasmania were in front of the half. But ultimately, just Illawarra's just got too much. Even without Darius Days, they've just got too much to play for. They've got too many weapons. They're too well-drilled. And I think they come away with probably a double-figure win in the end.
They'll be back next year, the Jack Jumpers. But they're done for this campaign. Illawarra to win this. It's been a heck of a run, though, for Tasmania. You're allowed one down year, especially when you've got the injury bill that they do. But what a run it has been for Tasmania. And I expect it to continue next season when they're all back fit and firing and healthy as well. Adelaide and Brisbane, Friday night at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre.
Adelaide by a million next.
Yep. Perth.
I hate to be disrespectful to Brisbane, but forget about it, you know. And again, it's the same story with Tasmania. Just too many injuries. And again, they're not technically out of it, but Adelaide kills them off and they do it in blowout fashion.
Last home game for the regular season as well for Adelaide. They may not get to play on their home floor again if they don't get into the semi-finals or get into the playoffs anyway. So they'll be determined to go out on a high if they can get that win over Brisbane, which you would expect that they will. They hit the road against South East Melbourne on Sunday and then Perth next week. Perth and South East Melbourne, Friday night, RAC Arena. Get the popcorn.
What a game. And so much to play for both teams, clearly. The Nathan Sobey going back into Russell Westbrook mode is not what I want to see. He did it again the other night, even though they won. He was just... Again, he just, more often than not, Nathan, just that short circuit in his brain happens and he feels like he just has to do everything, which in this team he doesn't. Even without Derek Lawton Jr. there, they've got more than enough to cover for him. So Nathan, I don't know, look, it's just in his DNA, I guess, that he can't help himself. He takes bad decisions. He takes bad shots at the wrong times. He forces it too much. When he allows himself to move the ball, he's a great facilitator. I mean, he had 10 assists against the Jack Jumpers. Yeah, he was terrific. But so often, he and the commentators talk about it in his games of late, that, you know, he just, these options he takes are silly. You know, these pull-up threes in transition. Craziness. He does it when he doesn't need to do it. So attacking the, just going one-on-one and over-dribbling the crap out of the basketball, all that stuff. So that's the negative. The positive has been, obviously, the emergence of Joe Wieskamp. I think it's been a huge fill-up for them. I think Matt Hurt is an all-NBL player. I think Jordan Hunter's been excellent this year. Angus Glover, ever since Josh King came in and believed in him, it's the Gus that we saw be that hero for the Sydney Kings in their second championship. Look, off the bench, you know, Owen Foxwell, I mean, re-signed for 2 years, which is a great pickup. And our friend Simon Mitchell alluded to that he felt like that was going to happen. That's a great signing for them. I mean, at worst, he's going to be a quality backup guard for the next 5 years in this league. he could probably end up starting at some stage. Tommy Vidanovic is that great role player who I love those guys, you know, that do the dirty work. And then on the other side, you got Perth, who only had 14 assists in that game, that loss to Cairns. That was a real slap in the face to them. And I thought they were over this defensive frailties of theirs, but clearly they aren't. So they've got to bounce back and they've got to do it in a hurry. Cotton, he's a match winner on his own. We know this. They hopefully will get back Dylan Windler. Christian Doolittle's been outstanding for them. Keanu Pinder was good this week, but again, he's kind of a bit of a, you just don't know who you're going to get on a night-to-night basis. Ithana Mansa's been good in parts, but he's a next star, and how much can you rely on him? Ben Henschel, I love to death, but again, he's got a little bit of Nathan Sobey about him, ironically. You know, he's maybe too confident in his own game sometimes. He needs to maybe rein it back a bit and be more of a playmaker. Love Elijah Pepper's game. I mean, he's going to shoot when he's open, and that's what they want. This has got there's so much riding on this game for both teams. It's a fascinating matchup. Oh boy, it really is a toss of the coin. I'm actually going to go with a Phoenix. I know that sounds a little counterintuitive, given Perth have so much to play for and it's their home court. We know that the Red Army will be all over the Phoenix, but I think this is a bit of a statement game for Southeast Melbourne. They know they can go into that venue and win. They've done it before. I think they just get the job done. I think they survive a Bryce Cotton onslaught and they sneak out of RAC with a very, very tight, close win.
Yeah, I'm going with Southeast Melbourne as well in a one-bucket affair. It's hard to overstate how important this game is because you win this game for either of these two teams and second place is still very much on the table for you. At the very least as well, hosting a playing game. So, yeah, this is huge. I'm going with Southeast Melbourne just, but yeah, this is going to be box office. This is a playoff game come early. Cannot wait for that one Friday night. Going back and forth. No, I'm going to stick with the Phoenix. I'm going to stick with the Phoenix. New Zealand and Cairns, Saturday Spark Arena. Next, Melbourne and Tasmania, Saturday at John Kettle. Their seasons are over. Who cares? Melbourne, yeah. Tasmania, and I say that with love, especially the 40, but next. Actually, no.
Well, you haven't talked about New Zealand yet.
No, and you're right. I just remembered because did you hear about an interview that Matt Walsh did on New Zealand radio?
I did.
Yeah.
It was very eye-opening, you know, very eye-opening for what he said.
So just
and yeah,
to give you a little bit of a crib notes version. Now I think this is with New Zealand Talk Radio. I'm trying to get the name of the station. I do apologise. I'm not as familiar with the New Zealand radio as I am with the other ones. I'll get that in a moment. But anyway. He's had an interview with
News
New Zealand
Talk,
Radio.
Yeah, News Talk.
There
News
we go.
Talk ZB Radio. There we go.
News Talk, yeah. ZB Radio. Just to paraphrase some of the things he said. At the time that they went to the US and elaborating why Taco 4 was signed, the Taco, quote, "Didn't think at the time we had a team that could compete for a championship. That's why we brought Taco in. It's been disappointing." Explained that the Taco edition has been average as a team, not singling out Taco.
Okay.
Righto. He said a US tour for NBL 26 is currently 50-50. I've got to say this right off the bat. They've got to stop these trips to the States. It ruins seasons.
It's probably worth a lengthier discussion and maybe with a special guest, I think, because it speaks to the NBL-NBA relationship and where it's at and what it's done for us, what it's done for them, et cetera, how far has it gone too far? Do we need to look at other ways to kind of cement that relationship without playing these preseason games? Is the next step to bring an NBA team here? And I know that's been talked about quite a bit. Obviously, logistically is going to be the problem. Time, it would probably, you know, if you could bring... Like they played a game in Paris for obvious reasons because of Wembanyama. but a regular season game in Paris, and that's an 8-hour flight. So that from the East Coast, that's doable. But then you're talking about from the West Coast, a 12 to 13 hour flight to Sydney or Melbourne, which is where you'd probably have it. And then obviously Perth is, add in another 5 hours or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's the key, I think. But it's definitely something we should probably discuss in another roundtable.
If at the very least, the Breakers have got to take a year off from these things because they've been over there more often than not.
Yeah.
Speaking on Freddie Gillespie, quote, when he got to New Zealand, he was an unhappy and grumpy guy.
I could not believe that he said that. I mean, talk about look, you're throwing the guy under the bus because you made a mistake. So Gillespie's gone. He's playing in Italy. So he probably thought, who cares? It's not going to get back to him. Who gives a damn? But it was your failure, mate. You stuffed up. And you are, look, I'm not a fan of Matt Walsh at all. I never have been. He's not a fan of me. So that's fine. Whatever. I get on with pretty much everybody but in the league, but there are a couple of guys I don't, and he's definitely one of them. So that to me is complete garbage. I can't believe that he said that. He's an unhappy and grumpy guy. It's easy for you to say now, mate, when he's not even there. He's gone. He wasn't playing like he was an unhappy and grumpy guy when it all finished. I mean, yeah, I was just, and now you've stuffed up. The Taco thing hasn't worked. Let's blame for it. The reason we got rid of him was because he was quite unhappy and grumpy. Give me a freaking break.
Which is why you signed Taco Fall. He's trying to sign PJC for next season. He made the highest offer in the history of the Breakers to bring him back for NBL 25 and is willing to go higher next season to retain him for NBL 26. I'd say back up the Brinks truck. Coach's job is secure, and they'll be looking at locals as the sole focus for changes in the roster. He mentioned Finn Delaney as an option to return. So let's go with the locals for a moment, because that is the thing that really the Breakers were built on, the nucleus of their local core. And I would love to see them go back to that.
Yeah. They need to make it a focus. There's no doubt, because it's all about, with them, it's about the connection to the New Zealand basketball community. And I think, when you look at the roster this year, it's kind of like, well, McArthur King, yeah, you could pass him off as a Kiwi, but the truth is he's kind of a mixed guy. He's an American. He's New Zealand. He's got New Zealand roots. He's got American roots. So, I don't include him. I mean, who else really? I mean, he's one. Then you kind of struggle because you've got a Jonah Bolden and you've got a Mitch McCarron and you've got guys that are not New Zealanders. And traditionally, this has been the team of going back a Phil Jones or a Pedro Cameron or a Tommy Abercrombie or a Finn Delaney, as he mentioned, or a Mika Vekona. Just going down the line, and it's really been, a core group of guys that they've had. We're all Kiwis, we're all New Zealanders, and we're all part of the national program. And I think they've got to go back to that, because I mean, this hasn't worked. Now, the funny thing is, not to say that it wouldn't have, because obviously when Gillespie was playing and playing as well as he was, they looked a very together unit that was going to surprise people. I mean, what were they, 7-3, I think, before the whole thing went to crap? So it may have worked had he stuck with Freddie, I guess, is the irony of ironies. But given, the Taco thing has been a debacle, and it was done, I don't care what they say, it was done for social media clicks. It wasn't done for anything else. They thought they could, anybody with half a brain could see he was wrong for this league, for the team. The Gillespie situation and how that was handled was pathetic. And they've just, he's doubled down, and now he's calling him an unhappy and grumpy guy. It's just total throw under the bus stuff. Like, give me a break, Walsh. Seriously, it's not on. But, what do I know? I'm just some dumb Aussie. But, yeah, I'm so not a fan of Matt Walsh. And I think he's, they need to do a lot to get back, because we need a strong New Zealand in the National Basketball League, no doubt.
The amount of disconnect that I've seen with Breakers fans, and just judging on socials, but the amount of disconnect between Breakers fans and their team this season, particularly after Gillespie's departure, they've got a bit to make back. And a New Zealand core would be a great start. Yeah, that was something. That was certainly something. Interesting radio coming out of the Shaky Isles. So thanks for that. That was enjoyable. And that's about as far as we'll go into the analysis of New Zealand and Cairns. Melbourne and Tasmania.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, I think Tasmania's last stand will be the game before, clearly, at home against Illawarra on Thursday at my state. So they only get a day recovery, and then they're facing a Melbourne team that suddenly has won its last two and is looking back like Melbourne was. I'm not 100% convinced about United just yet, but clearly that's a game they should win and win convincingly. I mean, normally Tasmania would give them a huge run for their money, but it's going to be the same situation against Illawarra. Just those injuries, just too much. Just not enough talent, not enough experience. They're playing a lot of kids at the moment. They'll play hard. They will never stop trying, but they're just playing a bigger team, a more experienced group, a team with more talent, a lot more talent at the moment. Jordan Crawford and Milton Dahl will have to go for gigantic numbers if they're even going to be, you know, reasonably competitive in this game. I think Melbourne joins Illawarra in beating the Jack Jumpers and ending their season.
Chance to exercise a few demons as well for Melbourne United against Tasmania. Granted, it's a heavily depleted Tasmania, but betting up on them just a week out from what is going to be the biggest throwdown since the semi-final series of 2021. I think that will brighten a few hearts down here in blue, that's for sure. Going Melbourne to win. Melbourne to win comfortably. Just back on the Breakers. I'm now wound up again, because Adelaide, a couple of times this season, played the circus music for them, and it's been apt. And of course, long-time aficionados of this program have known that I've had the Brisbane Bullets in my sights for quite some time. I'm willing to give Brisbane a pass this year. I think they made some great strides forward before things just ultimately got too hard. But I mean, the Breakers, when you look at this season for New Zealand, it just makes you want to take your head and put it against something firm and then repeatedly do the same motion until right. You lose consciousness. I mean, how can you all think that? And some of the words that have come out of the Breakers organization, I mean, this interview, the CEO's interview a few weeks back, I mean, are they seeing what we're seeing? Feels like we're all playing happy families over in New Zealand, and I'm watching a team that's gone from very much a championship contender to a team that's been running out the clock since before New Year's.
Look, I think they're still playing with effort, and I think it's fair on look, Petri Kopanen was dealt a really bad hand in the end. You know, just again, it really comes back to that one decision, that whole Taco Fall versus Freddie Gillespie decision. And again, this is coming from someone who was critical of Freddie in the first few weeks. I didn't think he was going to last, but he proved me wrong. And
he also proved you right.
Yeah. Well, in the end, yeah. And but then I look, and as I said, I've been a fan of Taco because he played for my team in the NBA, the Boston Celtics, everybody knows. And he was a fun story. But to sign him, I'm thinking, you're in the business of winning basketball games. He's not a guy that's going to help you win basketball games. He might come up with some big individual performances, but if you have to change the way you play to accommodate him, which they did, and he's so limited in what he can do offensively and even defensively because of all the stuff we talked about, the inability to defend the pick and roll and the lack of lateral movement and all that stuff, despite the enormous size, it was never going to work. So, yeah. You just shake your head in the wall. I feel sorry for Kopanen, but I think it is good that at least they've given him that extra year, because that just would have been the icing on the cake had they fired him.
Yeah, You know, I wouldn't blame him if he got a bigger offer and he just went peace. The way that he's
yeah,
been
that
dealt
too.
In.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's more that they need to schmooze him, not the other way around. Super Sunday. There's no other way to describe this.
Yeah, it is.
Sydney
what
Perth.
What a way to finish round 19.
Yes, yeah, Sydney Perth at Qdos in front of what looks like is going to be another bumper crowd.
I look forward to walking in the building and looking up again and seeing the curtains on that top level completely retracted and know that there's going to be, well, they only do it if it's at least 14,000. But based off what, again, Matt Denham told me before the Adelaide game last week, it's more likely to be in the 17 range, which is going to be fantastic. It'll be the biggest crowd ever to watch a Sydney Perth game. Sorry, Red Army. You just don't have a big enough venue. But yeah, the frightening thing for Kings fans should be that Bryce Cotton is one of those, he's a showman. And if he knows there's going to be that sort of a crowd, he's going to want to put on a show in front of that crowd. And the Kings have got a couple of guys that are going to be tasked to go with him, whether that be Bolqual initially, Isaiah Liafa later on, or, you know, what I've been advocating for from day one. It's just the blitz the absolute hell out of him and get the ball out of his hands. And if someone else beats you, then someone else beats you. But you just don't want Bryce to beat you if you can avoid it. I mean, what a matchup. He and Jalen Adams is always worth the price of admission, even though Adams, as I've said, is clearly not 100% with that back injury, figuring out ways to score and to be effective and be a floor general. But he's doing it tough, Jalen. So, you know, I admire him greatly. Look, on paper, this is a better matchup for the Kings, ironically, than Adelaide is, because the Kings can do some damage inside. You know, the Perth, they don't really have those head toppers. I mean, Counter Pin is kind of in the 6'7", 6'8", range. Ethan Almanza, 6'9", 6'10", but how much will he play and how many productive minutes is he going to be able to produce? I don't know. Christian Doolittle's kind of in that 6'6", 6'7", range. Same goes for Dylan Windler, presuming that he plays. So from a frontline perspective, it should be a little easier for the Kings to get stuff going on the inside. The other part of it is Perth, not a great team defending in transition. The Kings love to run. Perth will try and crash the boards and control it that way. They know that's where Sydney, one of Sydney's weaknesses is. You know, it's one of those things. Kings haven't played well at home for most of the year. They really haven't. This would be a great time to do it. I'm going for the Kings. I'm not 100% confident on it, but I just and I think they do have the bodies like a Bolqual to throw at Bryce Cotton. So, you know, I'm not saying Bryce is going to be restricted like he is against Melbourne when you've got two unbelievable defenders in Shaley and Matty Dellavedova. But the Kings can get physical with him. They can blitz him. They can take the ball out of his hands. And if Perth wants to turn this into a track meet, that favours the Kings as well. So ultimately, I'm going for the Kings, not with too much conviction, but I do think they'll get the job done and set themselves up for that game next week, which is going to be one of the biggest games in the history of that Sydney-Illawarra rivalry.
Yeah, I'm going with Sydney. And for me, the difference will be Perth's defensive frailties. That's where I think that it will come apart for the Wildcats. That's going to lead into Southeast Melbourne against Adelaide at John Cain Arena to finish off the weekend. And this is a colossal clash as well.
So many great players on both sides. We've spoken at length about the Phoenix. I think, you know, from an Adelaide perspective, Isaac Humphries is going to be an enormous key against Jordan Hunter. And, you know, Ice was one of the best games I've seen him play, quite frankly, against the Kings. I just thought that was the Ice that ended up in the NBA for a period of time. Just so dominant at both ends. I love it when he's aggressive going to the basket. I love it when he calls for the ball. And he demands the ball with intent. And I'm going to attack and I'm going to put heat on the rim. And he can score in a number of ways around the low block. He's a great rim protector when he sets his mind to it. Obviously, Montrezl Harrell, you know, is going to be a big focus as well against Matt Hurt. That's going to be a great matchup. Kendrick Davis, who goes to him? I presume Nathan Sobey. But Davis is just, look, the MVP is, it was a three-horse race with Kel. I think he's sort of slipped away a little bit. I think it's between Kenrick and Bryce. I know I saw that graphic that had them almost identical as far as stats are concerned. Bryce is probably still the favourite, but if Kenrick Davis won MVP this year, I wouldn't be disappointed. I wouldn't be angry at all. I think the young man's a legitimate star. I think he's been brilliant. I think he means a lot to that team, and it's difficult to see them, you know, even competing without him, quite frankly, or someone of his ilk. He's definitely an all NBL candidate, clearly. This, again, is a toss-up. You know, back to John Cain, go the Phoenix. I'm going to go with them only because of what you said as far as Adelaide. I think it's right, apart from the Kings, who, by the way, Brian Georgian in that game, that loss, for the first time in his illustrious career, he lost two home games to a single opponent in a single season, being Adelaide. So lost both games at Qdos Bank Arena this year. So never been done before. So give Adelaide credit for that. But aside from the Kings, who Adelaide owns at the moment, they haven't been great on the road. So I think for that reason, I go with the Phoenix.
I'm really excited to be there to see this one on Sunday. Both games in Melbourne this weekend. It's been a while since we've had hoops in Melbourne, since before Christmas, of course, with the Australian Open shutting down that precinct. Well, of course, there's the State Basketball Centre, but this is right in the heart of the metro. I think they're going to get a big crowd for this one, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, their last home game of the regular season. I could see them getting 8,000 or 9,000 for this one, to be truthful. And I hope they do, because, boy, do they deserve it. It's been one of the great stories of the season, the way that they have turned things around. This was a team that was 0-5, and they fired their coach. They're now 15-11, and a very real shot of finishing in the top two. That is one of the great revivals that we have seen in recent times, regardless of what happens from here.
And Josh King is 12-5 since he arrived. 12-5, that's 71% winning record, 70.6. If you want to argue semantics, but nearly 71%.
If he's here for the full season, is he coach of the year?
He'd go close, you know. And look, he may still get votes. I just think you've got to look at the complete season, right? And I think Justin Tatum has been the best coach objectively for most of the season. I would think.
Yeah.
You know, and even though, and just what he's done with that group and how he's got them up and about and all of that stuff, which we've talked about. But to answer your question, yeah, he may very well. I mean, he's just, look, the biggest compliment I can give him is that, to me, he's another Chase Buford. Maybe without as much histrionics as Chase.
No LED signs kicked yet.
It might still be broken. I mean, he put his foot right through it in Hobart. I mean, he's obviously a guy with great understanding of the game. He obviously knows how to motivate his guys. I think the big key for him has been convincing them to play defense, because under Mike Kelly, again, Mike Kelly was a great defender as a player, but he could never translate that as a coach. They didn't play deep, and suddenly they do. And that's down to Josh King establishing, you know, his own culture, his own set of values, and you know, obviously bringing that to the table. We've heard from Simon Mitchell, and they had done a lot of that culture work beforehand, which clearly helped bringing Josh in at that time. But really, it's, you know, he's got to organize everything. You know, he's got to bring everything to the table, and he's done a fantastic job with it. So, yeah, I mean, he's been terrific. And look, they're in a position now, it wouldn't surprise, even without Derek Walton Jr. And, I mean, I'm hoping that Walton Jr. comes back for the play-in tournament, or if not, the semi-finals. They are a legitimate chance to win the championship this season.
Massive chance. And be one of the great revivals if they did. Just thinking, would it be around, was it the 1997 Melbourne Tigers that started poorly, then they turned it around in the second half?
Yeah, won the 16 straight, and there was a very famous article that kind of kicked it off, written by a former NBL player, actually, then was a writer for the Canberra Times, Chris Appleby. And basically the article stated at the time that Lindsay Gaze was too old and should retire, and and Melbourne were playing a style that wasn't going to get it done. And then they went out and signed a guy called Marcus Timmins, and they just took off from there. Won 16 straight, won the title.
Are there shades of that in this?
Could be. Yeah, could be a little bit. Although, obviously, there was no coaching change. It was just something from within. You could also go back to when Ian Sacker won the 16 straight for Townsville. And, I mean, at that time, they were being savaged by the media, the local media in particular. And then they turned it all around and ended up going all the way to the semi-finals. So it's not unprecedented.
I think it was it is
different because of the fact that he was a mid-season coaching hire. I think that's the key.
Yeah.
That he was a mid-season coaching hire. It is extremely unusual for a guy to come in as a coach mid-season, not even mid-season, sort of a third of the way through the campaign, and turn everything around the way he did. Just remarkable.
I was thinking the Wildcats were bottom of the table at Christmas the year that they beat the Hawks. I think that was 2017 from memory. So there has been...
Yeah, Wildcats as well.
Yeah. There have been instances like it in history, but this would be one of the best if they can pull it off from here, which they are every chance to do. I'm tipping them to beat the 36ers on Sunday and set up a throwdown that is going to rule them all the final game of the regular season. So that's us done for this week on the Roundtable. Thanks so much for your company, as always. Next time we meet, it's going to be the final weekend of the NBL campaign. We're going to have a very clear view as to who's going to need to do what to cement their place in the playoffs and who's going to get home court advantage. Cannot wait to see you next week for our final regular season edition of the Roundtable.